We're now beginning the study of the 18th chapter of Judges. In the previous chapter, the 17th chapter, we read how idolatry crept into the family of Micah. It was in one family. Now in this chapter, we see how that it is spread from that one family into a tribe, into the tribe of Dan. And we're going to see how that it becomes settled in a noted city. And certainly, how great a matter does a little fire kindle. Verse 1 of chapter 18. In those days there was no king in Israel. And in those days the tribe of the Danites sought them an inheritance to dwell in, for unto that day all their inheritance had not fallen unto them among the tribes of Israel. Now back in the days when they were settling this land, and we have reason to think that this portion of the history comes shortly after the time of Joshua and before the time of the judges, and when there was no king in Israel, no ruler in Israel. Dan had received the portion that would be between Judah and the Philistines. Well, because of the strength of the Philistines, and because Dan was the last tribe settled, then they really didn't get all their inheritance, and they had too little inheritance for them. So Joshua made provision for them to be able to settle another city, to conquer and to hold another city, which was a long ways off, way up in the north, called Laish. And in Joshua 19, verse 47, we read about this. And the coast of the children of Dan went out too little for them. Therefore the children of Dan went up to fight against Lashem, and took it, and smote it with the edge of the sword, and possessed it, and dwelt therein, and called Lashem Dan, after the name of Dan their father. So we see how that this city way to the far north, which is about 30 miles north of the Sea of Galilee, not too far from Mount Hermon, this city is also called Dan way in the north, which is not anywhere near the original tribe of Dan. And so we remember that saying from Dan to Beersheba, Beersheba being in the extreme south, and this city of Laish that's renamed Dan being in the north is a traditional saying to encompass all the land of Israel from the north to the south. Well, in this story we have the account of them going up to take that city. Verse 2, And the children of Dan sent of their family five men from their coasts, men of valor, from Zorah and from Eshtaol, to spy out the land and to search it. And they said unto them, Go search the land. So five men were sent up for the job of spying the land, searching it out, and in general finding out just what would be needed to do to conquer this land. Now, some think that this was one particular family of Dan that did this, but the reading here doesn't really specify that. It does say they sent five men of their family. In the blessing given to Dan in Genesis 49:17, we find that Dan was to be as subtle as a serpent by the way. And again, in the blessing given by Moses in Deuteronomy 33, verse 22, that Dan would have the courage of a lion's whelp leaping from Bashan. And so it seems that both of these qualities were exhibited by this tribe as they made their assault upon this city of Lashem. These cities that the men came from, Zorah and Eshtaol, bordered between the tribe of Judah and the area of the Philistines. Now these were men that were men of valor. That is, they had courage, they had prowess, they had ability, they were going to be in the face of danger, and if danger should come their way, they would know how to handle it. Thus they were sent to spy out the land and to search it, and so they said to go search the land, and who, when they came to Mount Ephraim, to the house of Micah, they lodged there. So on their travels northward up to this city of Lashem, they came by this house of Micah there in Ephraim, and they lodged there. They accepted whatever hospitality I'm sure that Micah offered them. Verse 3, And when they were by the house of Micah, they knew the voice of the young man the Levite. Now, somehow or other, this Levite that Micah had taken and made a deal with and consecrated and made him his own private priest, this Levite was known by these five men. No doubt he'd done quite a bit of traveling and is searching around for a place, and They knew him, although they might not have recognized him when they saw him, but they did recognize his voice. So they knew the voice of the young man, the Levite, and they were, of course, wondering, what's he doing way up here in Ephraim? He's nowhere near close to where we saw him last. And they turned in thither and said unto him, Who brought thee hither, and what makest thou in this place, and what hast thou here? So they were just really finding out about his situation. What are you doing here? Who brought you here? What do you make here? What's your objective? What's your goal? What are you getting out of this? And of course, then as we know, this man had made an agreement with Micah. He'd come live with him. He'd be given some money. He'd be given some clothing. He'd be given food. He'd be in a capacity to serve as the priest for this private little house of God's that Micah had. Verse 4, And he said unto them, Thus and thus dealeth Micah with me, and hath hired me, and I am his priest. And so he explained to them what his situation was, and seemed to have clarified the matter. And they said unto him, Ask counsel, we pray thee, of God, that we may know whether our way which we go shall be prosperous. Now we see how that the idolatry is infecting these five men from Dan. They had just passed by Shiloh in their travels northward. They could have stopped there and asked the high priest to have consulted the Urim or the Thummim to give them some advice as to how this is going to turn out. But they didn't have enough faith, it seems, to do that. They neglected that. But here they come up with this priest that has his teraphim, or these little gods, and so they want to find out about them. It'd be like somebody today going to a fortune teller who claimed to have some kind of spiritual power that has nothing to do with what God has given, that is not mentioned at all in the Bible, and is not to be practiced among the followers of God, and they put more confidence, or some confidence, in this fortune teller when they had just forgotten to even ask God for his blessing and didn't even bother to pray to God about their situation. So that's what happens here. This offspring of a priest, this man who is outside the realm of God's authority, actually, is showing them that he is serving as a priest, and he no doubt shows them this house of the gods, the idols that he has, the teraphim, the ephod that Micah's made for him, and consequently they buy this, and so they say, you tell us. You go through these images you have and this a religion that's been set up by Micah, and you ask God that we may know whether our way which we go shall be prosperous. As though this man would have an inroad to God through these idolatrous things. And the priest said unto them, Go in peace, before the Lord is your way wherein you go. So whether he really believed it or not, we don't know, but the Levite told him that everything's going to be fine. You go in peace. The Lord's going to be before you everywhere you go. Everything's going to be fine. So they seem to have bought this and taking confidence in it. For verse 7 says, Then the five men departed and came to Laish. These five men of the tribe of Dan had been exposed to idolatry now. They had participated in it to some extent. They'd placed some confidence in it. And consequently, we're going to see that it will have a great effect upon them. And now we learn what these spies did accomplish as they went on up to Laish. Then the five men departed and came to Laish and saw the people that were therein, how they dwelt careless, after the manner of the Zidonians, quiet and secure, and there was no magistrate in the land that might put them to shame in anything, and they were far from the Zidonians and had no business with any man. So we see here what kind of a condition this city of Laish was in. They dwelt careless. That is, they didn't have a guard. They didn't have any security, it seems. They were not prepared for an invasion, and it seems that probably the nation of Israel had gone so slack and so slovenly so far as conquering the land was concerned that now these people that could have been conquered by Israel had let their guard down, And no doubt Laish knew that they were marked by the tribe of Dan for possession by Dan, but it had been so long since it had any kind of a threat whatsoever that now they just simply have grown careless. And they're described as being after the manner of the Zidonians, quiet and secure. Now, of course, Sidon was a seacoast city. It had a lot of natural resources and beauty, and they were quiet. They were secure. They had reason to be. But this city of Laish had also grown quiet and secure like them. And there was no magistrate in the land. Now, here was another thing that was definitely in favor of the men of Dan, who would want to conquer this city. They didn't have any magistrate. They didn't have any ruler. They didn't have any law and order set up, it seems. And this word for magistrate is actually translated heirs of restraint. There was no one to put restraint upon the actions of the citizens so that they were not being governed in an orderly manner. They were not subject to laws. They were not subject to a common central head that would help them to defend the city. And the work of the magistrate, the work of the rulers of any land is also laid out here. For he says, no magistrate in the land that might put them to shame in anything. Now, one of the ways that the rulers of a nation have to manage to keep their citizens under subjection and in accordance with law and order is to be able to put them to shame. When somebody does something that's wrong, they should be put to shame for that. They should be made to feel shame. They should be made to feel that they are out of step with the harmony and with the laws and rules of their peers. And we find that this is one of the most important forces in moving anyone towards conformity, is to be able to make that person or that group to feel like that they are ashamed. And the more lawless a group becomes, the more disorderly they become, it's usually because of their ability to not feel shame. We're told in Ephesians by the Apostle Paul that we're not to walk as the other Gentiles, and one of their qualities is that they are beyond feeling. They're not able to feel shame. One of the qualities that a Christian woman is to have, that she is to be shamefaced, that is, she's to be able to feel shame. And so it is true with all of us. When our conscience is so educated that when we do something wrong, this conscience pricks us, we're able to feel shame. And when somebody does step out of line, then the primary way to bring that person back into line with things, to bring them back to a sense of responsibility and law-abiding, is to make them feel shame. This is also very true of a family who is rearing children. If these children do not have the ability to feel shame, then they're going to be a group of children that are unruly, and the parents will not have as much influence as they should have. So, there was no magistrate here that they might put them to shame in anything. And another disadvantage this city of Laish faced, so far as defending themselves from an invasion, was that they were far from the Zidonians. That is, this city of Sidon would not be able to give them any assistance. They were too far away. So they were kind of in an isolated and removed area, and whatever happened to them, the city of Sidon would not be able to give them any assistance. Another quality that they name is that they had no business with any man. Now, this either means that they were slothful and not intercommunicating in a productive way, or it could also mean that they didn't have any agreements with any other nation or any other city to give them assistance in time of problems. They hadn't helped anyone else, and consequently they wouldn't receive any help. They had no agreement or no business with any man. They might have felt themselves so independent, so secure, and so self-reliant that they didn't need any agreement with any other nation round about them for protection. And so here they were, alone, had no business with any man. So after sizing the situation up, the spies saw that this was a plum ripe for the picking. They saw that they would be able to conquer this city. And so in verse 8, And they came unto their brethren in Zorah and Eshtaol, and their brethren said unto them, What say ye? So they came home with the report, and the brethren were asking them, What do you say about this city? What's the result? And they said, Arise, that we may go up against them, for we've seen the land, and behold, it is very good. And are ye still? Be not slothful to go and to enter to possess the land. So they gave a very favorable report. They said, We've seen the land, and we may go up against them. Arise, now is the time. It is a very good land. It's going to be fruitful. It's going to be able to take care of us. It's going to answer the needs that we have. And so, are you still? I mean, why are you waiting? Now, no doubt Dan had been still for a long time and had not desired to go on and to conquer that which was to be their territory. But these spies are urging them on now. Are you still? Be not slothful to go and to enter to possess the land. Let's go. There's no need to wait any longer. No need to procrastinate anymore. Now is the time to go. This city is one that we can now take. Verse 10. And when you go, you shall come unto a people secure and to a large land. Now, a people secure means that they were not going to be able to protect themselves. They hadn't made any arrangements for defense. They had felt that they were so secure and everything was going so well with them that they had grown lazy so far as their protection is going to be. So we come to a people secure and to a large land. Now it's a land that's going to be adequate. It's going to fulfill our needs. It's what is described here as a large land. For God hath given it into your hands, a place where there is no want of anything that is in the earth. So we can see what a wonderful place this land of Canaan was. For here in the very northernmost corner of it, this area is described as being an area in which there is no want of anything that is in the earth. They'd have all that they needed in the way of provisions. No want of anything that's in the earth, which is a very complimentary description of any territory. I don't care where it is. Verse 11. And there went out from thence of the family of the Danites, out of Zorah, and out of Eshtaol, 600 men appointed with weapons of war. So they sent an army, a fairly small army, of 600 men with their weapons. Now this would be about 1/100th of the tribe of Dan, for we read in Numbers 26:43, when they came into Canaan, that their number was 64,000. So here we have 600 out of 64,000. But these, no doubt, are going to be the best hand-picked soldiers of the land. And they have their weapons of war, so they're ready to be able to be effective in this battle now. Verse 12, And they went up and pitched in Kirjath-Jearim in Judah. Now this place of Kirjath-Jearim is located about 8 miles northwest of Jerusalem. And it is the first stop that they made on the trip up to this city of Laish. And they hadn't traveled very far, so no doubt this army had just gotten pretty well organized. They'd gotten the weapons distributed, and they were just now organized into a unit that would be prepared to go and make war. So the very first night they pitched in this place called Kirjath-Jearim, and whereof they call that place Mania Dan unto this day. Now this word Mania Dan means the camp of Dan. So evidently camps with soldiers was such a rare thing that whenever this place was used by this army of the tribe of Dan as a camping place overnight, it retained the name then, the camp of Dan, for a long time after that. At the time this history was written, said it is called that unto this day. Behold, it is behind Kirjath-Jearim. And this was such a significant event to have the army camp there overnight that the place then was renamed after that event. Verse 13, And they passed thence unto Mount Ephraim and came unto the house of Micah. So it seems that the second night that they camped, or at least this was a night very soon after that first night, they camped up in Ephraim. And as they made this second camp, they came to the house of Micah. We remember that these spies had visited this house of Micah on their way up to spy out the land, and they had asked this Levite, who had been made a priest by Micah, to consult with his images and to ask the Lord if they were going to be successful in their spy mission. And he told them they would be successful, so they'd placed a lot of confidence in this. So they come back to this place. They have a feeling now that there is something that is very religious, something very spiritual, something very powerful about this situation that Micah set up with his house of the gods, with his molten image and graven image and the ephod and the teraphim and his makeshift Levite priest. And so they have a strong affection for this. They've really taken to it. And as they make this march upward then on their way to the battle with the city of Laish, they stop off here. And they're going to get another dose of this idolatry now. Verse 14 says, "Then answered the five men that went to spy out the country of Laish and said unto their brethren, Do you know that there is in these houses an ephod and teraphim and a graven image and a molten image? Now therefore consider what you have to do." We've got some things very valuable here. And they're really not protected. They're just owned by this one man. And they have brought us some really good fortune. We've been very successful after having consulting them. And so I want you to consider what you need to do here. We need to have these things for ours. These things are worth stealing or worth buying. They're worth obtaining at any cost because they are so valuable. There are a great many fine things for devotion here. And we don't have anything like this in our country. We've never come across anything just like this before. And these things are very valuable. And if we can make ourselves masters of these gods, if we can have these gods working for us, then just think of the success that we're going to have. So we're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friend.